Well, hello, hello, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are viewing in the world. We're back for another installment of Stuck Inside These Four Walls. This is the fourth installment of this special series that we do. And this is the second live installment of the Stuck Inside These Four Walls that we've done. We did two initially, which we recorded, and then we went live last month for April. And here we are now at the end of May in America here on Memorial Day weekend. Getting together for the fourth show. We've got, two friends of ours here, and of course my co-host of Two Legs, Mr. Tom Hunyadi, who joined us as well. And we're fresh off our episode 208 with Jude Kessler, which we dropped earlier this afternoon. But we'll get to all that later. Joining us today for episode 4, it's about just a little after 10 p.m. in the UK, and that is Beatley Tone from Beatley Tone's Beatle Channel. Hello, Tone.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Tom. Hi, Joe. Hello, everyone who's out there.
Yeah. Did you have a hard time coming up with a question for this one, or did you have your question already in the can for the last few weeks?
Me, I've got my question. I had my question ready.
You already had it
ready and waiting.
Yeah. And last but certainly not least, we are joined by Joe Mayo, a.k.a. Mean Mr. Mayo's of YouTube fame, and also has a movie channel as well, as does my co-host, has a new movie channel as well, too. We'll plug at the end.
Yeah.
Hello, Joe, and good afternoon, and how are you, man?
Hi, Andy, doing well. Hello, Tom. Hello, Beatley Tone. Good to be here, but I got to tell you, as I said before the camera went on, I'm having a hard time coming up with questions for this. So I hope people in the audience will be able to come up with questions.
That's a good reason for going live, yeah, because we like engaging with the comments and the viewers who can throw in questions to spurn engaging topics of conversation to see where we go with it. But we are going to do a roundtable in a traditional old school fashion. When we did do this, we're going to ask one question each that we've prepared each. We'll answer it, and then we'll kick it over to the audience and see what they can come up with as well before we say sayonara. So let's just say a couple of hellos before we start.
Yeah.
Hello, Russ.
Yes.
Hello,
yes.
Russ. Hello, Nick. Russ. Hello,
Nick.
Peter.
Nick.
Ellen.
Peter. Ellen.
And Heidi. Yeah.
Heidi.
Two of those top fan statuses duking it out. That's up to them to figure out.
Yes.
Good to see you here in the comments, Heidi, after the Beatle Fest. See? I'm all smiles.
Hey, it's Tom Brennan.
Tom Brennan in the house. Hello, Tom. And Tom messaged me a couple days ago. Nice. He watched my two Yes-related new videos on my own channel. And thank you for watching those too, Tom Brennan. And he discovered the Yes tribute band that way. It's cool as well. So
We've got something Yes related coming up pretty soon, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. We'll keep that a secret for now.
Oh, yeah. That's
do you want to know a secret?
Yeah.
Promise not to tell?
Promise not to tell.
Hey.
Hello, Reese. Hello. Yeah. How are you? Thanks for hopping on.
Hello,
today.
Hello.
So, yeah. Shall we begin?
Yeah.
Tom, is there any good of the order? Or anything new, noteworthy that we should pass on before we start? Tone, Joe, you guys can think of anything?
Oh, news-wise, it's been kind of quiet. I mean, the Conan McCartney thing's coming soon, but everybody knows about that.
Ringo's going to have three EPs out, but you know that's Ringo. So
yeah, but who knows when those are going to see the light of day? But other than that, I mean, it's been pretty quiet for release-wise.
Talk-wise, you guys have an episode coming up on Living in the Material World, do you not?
Yes.
Yes. That'll be a couple, not the couple weeks.
Not this Monday, a Monday after
yeah,
this.
Yeah, week
Monday
and a half, yeah.
Well, I expect
To celebrate the 50th anniversary.
The 50th, yeah, right, which I imagine that Mr. Yeah. Michaels is very happy about that
episode. Oh, yeah. His favorite album of all time.
Yeah, which I think is a really cool, you know, album to like from start to finish like that. It's a good album. I think we said before when we did this show that I think Tone, you think it's a little too draggy, right? Living in the Material World.
In places, there's some great stuff on it. I think the ones that are, you know, the really slow songs are really a little bit draggy, but beautifully played and sung. But they just don't. They don't really do it for me.
Yep.
But there's lots of good stuff on that album.
There is, yeah, for sure. Hello, Ollie. Hello, Henry. Dino.
Hello, hello.
Dino's in the house.
Yes.
All right, so let's get it started then, okay? I'll kick it off since I'm hosting this week. This is a fairly easy one, I think. Okay? Now, you'll have the choice to go to one of these concerts. Which one are you going to? Are you going to the one-to-one concert in August of 72 at Madison Square Garden?
Mm.
Are you going to see Wings at the LA Forum in June of 76? Are you going to see George Harrison in Japan in 1992 with Eric Clapton? Or are you going to Ringo's 70th birthday concert at Radio City Music Hall in July of 2010? Which one are you going to, Tom Hunyadi?
And I got to start. It's not fair. Wow. Look. I'm probably going to go to one to one. You know, knowing what we know now, you know, John didn't do many live events. You know, the opportunity to see him live. You know, we've got so many chances to see Paul, you know, George a little bit more, you know, obviously Ringo as well. I mean, I would, yeah, definitely the one to one for John. That would be, if I could do that, I would do that.
The one to one. Okay.
One to one. Yep.
Now I'm going to go down to Joe next or Tone, right? Joe?
Joe's going right clockwise.
Like. All right. So, Joe, those four concerts, which one are you picking? I think I know, but.
I'd pick one to one. And for the same reasons Tom said, basically, you know, I saw Paul many, many times. Ringo many, many times. It's tough because, you know, I hadn't seen George either or John, but I probably would go to one-to-one just to have the opportunity to see John. And I assume this is all, you know, retrospect kind of thing, like travel kind of thing, not at the time.
Yeah, no, you know? Again, if you're going back, think of it, you're with Marty and Doc, and you're getting in the DeLorean, and you get to pick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so that's what I'd have to do. But I do want to say, you know, regarding Ringo at Radio City for the 70th birthday thing, I had a ticket to go there, and that morning I was feeling rather nauseous with an upset stomach, and I just didn't go. And I knew in my mind, not for certain, it wasn't announced. I said, I know Paul's going to be there. I have a feeling he's going to be there, and I'm going to miss him there for the 70th. That's what happened. So I almost went there.
Okay. Tone, what would you pick?
Well, you said this was an easy question. It's not that easy, but I can discount George in Japan because I saw him at the Albert Hall in 1992. Solo gig that he ever did, like a full gig. Yeah. And the set was the same. So I'm going to discount that one, and I'm going to discount Ringo as well. I think historically it's got to be the one-to-one concert because John did so few gigs, you know, as a solo artist, it's gotta be the one to one. Even though Wings in LA was probably a much better gig
as a show, yeah.
As a show, as a spectacle, you know, we know that there was problems with, you know, with the performance for the one to one because John, you know, didn't want it to come out, did he? So he wasn't happy with the performance. But to see John Lennon live, for me, would be a no-brainer, really, I think.
Yeah. Now, the question here, somebody said about Bangladesh. Bangladesh is iconic, but there's a lot. That wasn't just a solo show, you see, and that's why I didn't pick that one. So the Japanese tour and the Tone was a full George show, a full set list, chock full of Beatle hits, chock full of George solo hits. And it was much better, in my opinion, than the Dark Horse tour of 74. So that's why I went with the 92, just to pick, you know, just to be a little bit different.
I went to Bangladesh, it would be to see Bob Dylan set.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Interesting here in the comments before I read mine off here. A lot of people go with Wings. Some people said one-to-one. Nick would have went to see George in Japan. Heidi said Wings. Ollie said John. Tom Brennan says no brainer. George in Japan. Yeah. Interesting.
Kit would have picked Wings so she could have seen Magneto and Titanium Man live. I know that. I know that.
I know it.
Yeah, I don't know what Kit would have picked. I don't know if she's on you and right watching. But as for my choice, it would be the one-to-one concert. Where else can you see Imagine, Come Together, Instant Karma, you know, all sung in one concert setting? You know, it just didn't happen that often. Had to go see that. Marcus said one-to-one. Yeah. Well, again, you had two performances. You had an afternoon show and you had an evening show on that date.
The band was weak, I think, you know.
Elephant's Memory. Yeah, a lot of heavy on the sax and stuff. But, you know, to hear
a lot of mistakes as well. A lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
But for me, that would be the complete set. I'd have seen them all then.
You would have.
Into that.
Yes.
Yeah. Again, having seen Paul so many times, again, you kind of changes your perspective a little bit when you look at it, the question this way. Ellen would have seen Wings too. So that was my question. So Tom, you're up.
Good one. It's a good one.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. I want to talk about George, and I want your guys' honest opinions about his guitar playing, specifically during the Beatles. Did you think he was innovative? Do you think he's deserving of a top 10 all-time guitarist? You know, do you think he deserves to be in a top 10 Let's leave the solo stuff alone. You know, because sometimes he gets poo-pooed on. Some of his early stuff might be a little sloppy. I would like to hear your guys' opinion on George as a guitarist. Do you think he was innovative, and do you think he belongs in anybody's top 10 list of greatest guitarists of all time?
Down to Joe to answer first.
I've talked about this on my channel every now and then, and I have to preface it by saying I am not a musician. I don't play a musical instrument. I don't know technical stuff, just what I hear. And when I listen to Beatles records, I love what I hear, you know, I mean, I love all of it. But then when I delve a little deeper, when I hear outtakes and things like that, George seems to be having a hell of a time, a lot of times, getting a solo good or getting it right.
Right.
I always tell a story. There's one of the versions of One After 909 at the end. It's all messed up, the solo. And John, I think, says, "What kind of solo was that?" He says at the end of it. And I'm like, wow, this is embarrassing almost. And sometimes I on some live performances, some BBC performances, I detect that. So I like what I hear on record. I assume when George has a chance to get it right, I think from what I gather, George could be great when he really took the time and could do it. Whereas I think the old joke, you know, somebody like Paul could just take the guitar and do it, you know. It must have been frustrating for Paul, I think. But anyway, so, you know, how can I not call George one of the greatest guitarists? But for me, I don't hear it as one of the greatest, you know, of all time. I don't top 10. He might be in the top 10, top 10 or 9, maybe. But, you know, there's a lot of people I put ahead of George, I think. Shred?
Yeah,
you know, he relies on other guitarists a lot, and he relies on Clapton a lot and stuff. Yeah. So,
okay. Tone, over to you.
I think if we're being really honest, I don't think that he would be in many people's top 10. Not, you know, guitarists. Probably not even diehard Beatles fans. You know, he's not as technically gifted as someone like, you know, Jimmy Page or Jeff Beck or Eric Clapton or Jimi Hendrix. So, you know, these are sort of mainstays of the top 10 guitarists. And he always said that he was never that good at, like, improvising. And all those guys, can just knock out a solo, just off the bat, you know. And George couldn't do that. He had to work out his solos. But that doesn't mean that he's not a great guitarist, because, you know, obviously Beatles music is different to the kind of music that all those guys played. And, I think that he was a very tasteful guitarist. He never wastes a note in his solo. And I know you're a big fan of Yes, Andy, but I always think a guitar solo should be 8 bars, 16 bars, absolute tops, and in pop music. And I think that he was a marvelous guitarist for filling those gaps, and always a really sort of thought out, tasteful solo.
Yeah,
Memorable solos that you can sing. Everybody knows the solo from something. They can sing it. They can sing every note.
Definitely tasteful. Definitely.
So think about one of his best solos, which isn't even on a Beatles track. It's on a Badfinger track on Day After Day. That solo is incredible. That's an incredible solo.
Yes.
Again, great word choice there, Tone. And even Tom Liverani said it. Tasteful.
Yeah.
It is. Is he top 10? No, I don't think he is. I think he gets on those lists sometimes because of, obviously, the Beatles Association.
Yeah, the Beatles.
But do I think he... And you look at all the other people like Page, Hendrix, and Townsend even, and Steve Howe. No, I don't think he has the chops as much as those guys. But he, for what he did, it was, it's hard to say, Yes, he's one of the great guitar players of all time, but the technical aspect of it, he doesn't have. So I have to say no. No, Tom, I have to say that he's not. As much as it kills me to say that, but knowing that there's, all the other great guitarists that are out there, but for what he produced, and I will say, too, from 62 to 67, he was, good, right? Good to pretty good. From 68 on, he takes on a whole other dimension of songwriting and playing, because he drops
Indian
so from that point on, I think he elevates himself really high into another stratosphere, from 68 onwards, that's kind of how I would break it down for George.
Joe brought up a good point. I mean, when you listen to those, the earlier takes, he's trying to work it out. And then, during the Get Back sessions, the TV show, he even talks about not being a really good improviser, right? When they're trying to come up with songs, in the studio, for the Let It Be. So, does he have good stuff? Yes, I think there's some great stuff. I love the Can't Buy Me Love solo. I think that's great. His workings for And I Love Her, is fantastic. And Andy Said Something is fantastic. He does great work. All My Loving. He does great work. However, is he top 10? That's hard to say. I mean, it just depends on what your where your taste of music
is. Top
10?
Was he top 10 in 1965? Probably.
Right. Probably. Well, probably because the innovative. That's another thing too. Was he innovative because of the time? Because of when he was the lead guitarist for the Beatles, or was he innovative, throughout life? I mean, throughout his career, obviously, playing the slide guitar throughout his solo career. I mean, he took on a whole nother.
That was his, that became level. His signature sound.
Yeah, yes.
As his signature. Right. Right. But as a Beatle, sure, he was innovative at times, but I want to say he's a top 10, but I got to go. He's a top 20 guitarist.
As long as he wasn't doing call and response licks on Hey Jude. Right, Tone?
Yeah, I was on Paul's side with that.
It's hard to take if you're a guitarist.
There's an unused guitar solo for Here Comes the Sun also.
Yes.
That was not used.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, Tom. It's tough to say it, but you to put him in top 10 – It's about top 20 for sure, but 10, but definitely innovative to inspire, I think look at somebody like the Byrds and Roger McGinn and how much he was inspired by Roger McGinn.
It's an interesting
question, but I don't think any non-Beatles fan would put George in the top 10.
You have to objectively look at it.
That's the thing.
You
know, you want to sentimentally, you just can't.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always playing for the song, right? I mean, if the song didn't require a flashy solo, you know, he's not going to. It wasn't necessary. He wasn't going to give it.
It's a lot like Ringo, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, was he even capable of doing a flashy solo? Like, you know what I mean?
Don't know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Excellent question there, Thomas. And now we are down over to Joe. Joe,
okay.
You're up.
I'm going to talk about Pete Best. What I want to talk about is, you know, Pete Best, his drumming is evident on some tracks that we can hear, the Deco auditions, the Tony Sheridan tapes. Although, isn't it true that somebody, Bernard Purdy or somebody, might have covered some of that? I don't know how accurate that is, but that's been the tale in recent times that Bernard Purdy, at least not the Tony Sheridan sessions, did something. Mm. I don't know. But the BBC tracks on a few, I think, isn't he on those early BBC tracks? I think he did a couple of BBC songs in the 62, maybe. I could be wrong, but I think he did one or two. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, and of course, there's the Love Me Do version that appears on the anthology. Anyway, my question is, if you think of all these songs just off the top of your head, is there one song where you could think that you actually like Pete Best drumming on and think, you know, that's a good job on that song? I was wondering. I know at least one I know that I like. So I was wondering if anybody else has any. It could be more than one, but it, you know, if you can think of one at least that you like the drumming.
Tom, you're up.
I have to say it's a long time since I've listened to the Decca auditions or any of the Tony Sheridan stuff. You know, the thing that sticks out in my mind is the Love Me Do version on Anthology, which is not good. So I'm gonna pass on this. I don't think I can qualify something that I thought is really good that I can actually remember. If I was to go back and listen to it, then, you know, as a drummer myself, I could probably say, yeah, this is good, but I just can't remember off the top of my head anything that's
right
in my mind as being
I get you.
Yeah, he does well there.
I have the added advantage of keeping my music player up in the background, so I just pulled up the Deco audition on my other screen, and in my ear, I'm listening to Like Dreamers Do. It sounds good. He's got some good fills on that. I think Like Dreamers Do is a fine example of drumming. It kicks off. I'm listening to one of the bootlegs, but from the Deco tape, he sounds fine. I think his drumming is perfunctory, I would say. It's nothing great, but it's good. It's not bad. Not looking at it. I mean, somebody's. Oh, Ain't She Sweet? Right from the Ain't She Sweet?
Actually, yeah, Cry for a Shadow is
Cry good. For a Shadow. The only Lennon and Harrison co-written song ever. So, sad story with Pete Best. You know, and they didn't have the nerve to tell him himself. But I'm really, did you know that when the anthology happened, he actually got some money from that?
Oh yeah. He made a fortune from Anthology One.
Yeah, he's in a good place. I'm glad. I bet he's glad that he stayed alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as legend has it, what I got from Joe Flannery was, they had Paul phone them up and said, "Look, I've got £8 million here. I could give to the tax man or you. Do you want it?" And Pete said, "Okay." I don't know if that number is true or not, but he did get some royalties because his performances were on that Anthology One, which, you know, to get to it. Thomas?
Well, they did some of my favorite covers. During that session, you know, Besame Mucho, I love Crying, Waiting, Hope, and Three of Cool Cats, the Sheik of Araby. I listen to those and sometimes you like the song so much that you don't notice if anything's really that bad. And to me, I mean, when I listen to some of those songs, I enjoy them so much that I don't really hear, you know, him playing bad. You know, because I'm listening to the lyrics, right? I'm listening to George. I'm listening to the singing. So I really you know, never really took the time to. Yeah, Memphis, Tennessee is another great version that they did as well. So, I mean, that's something I might have to do one day, Joe, is just, you know, go back. I'm sure that it's on YouTube. You can find it there, you know, and listen to all of them there. And then really just, you know, take the time, put the headphones on and really take the time to listen just specifically on the drumming. But because that I like those versions so much of the, those covers, I, you know, you never really notice just because I'm enjoying the song. So, well, you know,
I see a whole bunch of what look like records back there. You're going to tell me you don't have them there, sir?
No, actually, I don't have the deck auditions on vinyl. No.
Okay. You know. I forgive you. Okay. All right. Well, the first one that I've always liked that has been mentioned, Cry for a Shadow. I think I like the drumming on that, and My Bonnie also. Those are the two easy answers. I mean, those are the two I went in with thinking, especially Cry for a Shadow. That's my favorite Pete Best performance on record. If it is Pete Best, I think it is. It sounds like his style. It sounds like his style to me.
Cool.
Okay.
All righty then. We are going to move now over to Tone. Tone, your question.
Okay, so I'm interested what you guys and everyone out there thinks about this, because I want to talk about the you know, the Beatles box sets, the Giles Martin remixes, yeah. And you know, the way that it's gone, they've missed out Magical Mystery Tour and Yellow Submarine, which means that those songs haven't had the Giles Martin treatment or the box set treatment. And I just wondered, you know, now that it looks as if we're kind of going backwards, you know, Rubber Soul is probably going to be the next one. How do you think that, are they just going to miss these two albums out? Or how do you think they might handle, at the very least, you know, a Giles Martin remix? A remix of Magical Mystery Tour and at least the four Yellow Submarine songs.
He might not feel like he has to touch it because you've got the wonderful remix with the Yellow Submarine song track from '99, which still, when you still listen to it, you hear Nowhere Man and you hear some of those tracks from Yellow Submarine, Bulldog, It's All Too Much. Incredible remixing job that was done then in '99. Yeah. So... you know, maybe an updated version of that, but
yeah, there's no Mystery Tour on there.
No, I mean,
the tech has moved on though so much since it then. Has. You know, that is really. It's brilliant. The 1999, the song track thing, but imagine what they could do now, especially with, you know, Magical Mystery Tour, and psychedelic tracks. You know, you'd be hearing all sorts of things coming out of speakers. And, I mean, it'd be fantastic. I can kind of guess why they missed over them, because I think, you know, after Pepper came out, they had to, you know, they were going to do the White Album. They had to kind of get a wriggle on to get the White Album out for the anniversary. But surely they must, you know, it doesn't seem like they had any plan of how they were going to, you know, go through these albums. Hence, we kind of, you know, I guess when Sergeant Pepper came out, we might have just thought that might have just been a one-off at that time as a 50th anniversary. And, you know, that maybe they hadn't thought that, oh, hang on, we could do the whole canon here.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe they because we'd never had a Beatles box of that sort of size before, maybe they didn't know how well it would sell or whatever, but you know, they kind of you know, they've missed these two albums out, and I just wondered how they might go back.
I could see them doing Magical Mystery Tour if they're gonna go back to it at some point, you know, but or bundle it up here. Tom just has a great point here. Box it up and do a movie box, you know, where they do something like that, where all they just all the films.
I want Help and a Hard Day's Night to have their own albums, you know, box sets. Personally, I don't know if we can go just go in out of sequence or any old order. If you or wait,
we'll just continue around the round here, and I'll finish up, and then I'll pass it over to Tom. I think you know they probably should just issue them standalone. It would be nice to kind of keep them separate, have Yellow Submarine, you know, bundled with all the George Martin orchestration, you know, and then some extras, and just do it that way to keep it consistent with the canon as it was released. I think bundling it together would not be a great idea. They should just do it that way with, if they do it, but I don't know if they will, since, as you mentioned, they're going to work backwards and go with Rubber Soul. I don't know. So that's my answer. Tom?
We need, I mean, I would love to hear what Giles would do with, say, like, I Am the Walrus, you know, Fool on the Hill, Your Mother Should Know, Blue Jay Way. I mean, I think those, you know, was All You Need Is Love on the Sgt. Pepper?
No, it was on, it was on,
it's on Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine song.
That's on the,
and Baby or Rich Man's on there. Well,
you have a couple of Yellow Submarine tracks on there, Joe.
Checks on
the only Magical Mystery Tour songs that he's done are Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields, which were on the
But to Tone's point, you know, a lot of time has passed. I mean, their technique the technology has probably been better since then. You know, it's involved. So, you know, absolutely. I would love for them to, if they feel it's important now to go from Rubber Soul all the way back to the beginning, fine. But, you know, hopefully after that, you know, the almighty dollar might be saying, okay, well, we need to release these too, because then what's next? Literally, okay, all these 50th anniversaries that come out, right, or these anniversary editions, what's next? You know, what are they going to do next?
Nothing.
60th anniversaries? No.
These are the final word on these things.
Right. So, you know, do all of the regular albums and then come back and do the stuff that you forgot. You know, it was Hello Goodbye on the Sgt. Pepper?
Are you talking about the box set? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's other songs that they, you know, Only a Northern Song wasn't on. I mean, obviously, it's on the songbook as well, right? Only a Northern Song?
Yeah, it's on here. Yeah.
So, but again, that sounds great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's one of my favorite CDs. I mean, some of those songs, the way they sound is fantastic. But, you know, it's been, what, almost 25 years since its release. Let's update it. Yeah.
Mm. Now, and I believe you got Only a Northern Song on the Pepper box set. I believe you did.
No, they skipped over that. I think they skipped over that.
Did they? Yeah. A quick scan of the library here while we go around. Oh, it's on the anthology, but they did. You're right, Tom. It's not on there.
It's not on there.
Yeah. So, all right, down to you, Joe.
I have a lot to say about it. Well, for one thing, the idea of always having to change things for technology and everything. I mean, how far, you know, do you go with that? And Andy, I'm not so sure it's the last word, because in 87 and 88, that was the CD, the new thing, was like the last word, you know, and then that became the 2009, and then it became, you know, this new stuff that we're getting with the deluxe sets, and maybe 30 years, 50 years from now, there'll be some other sound we can't even imagine when they were able to do it in that. So maybe in our lifetime, it'll be the last time, although I'm not too sure of that.
I think it's been milked to death at that point.
It's all about money. It was already milked before these come out. Well, what I like about these deluxe sets, I'm interested mostly in the extras, you know, the evolutions of songs, the outtakes, any bonus books and information they can give us. That's the stuff I like, demos. As far as the masters, I've come to the conclusion, and I've been going through this back and forth. Well, I've never been a big Giles Martin fan, and I'm not. I think I said before on my channel, I think he's hit and miss. There are times I listen to a song and I like what he did with it, and other songs I listen to it, I'm disappointed what he did with it. And that's, the White Album is completely like that for me. You know, it's some things are enhanced, some things are messed up. I was listening just the other day to this, which is my go-to, This is what I wanted to say. And you know what? I went back to Revolver, and I'm going to shock a lot of people, but not everybody, because I did some research, and there's a few stragglers, hangers-on, that prefer. I went back and said, you know, I like the old Revolver better. For me, when I listen on a regular system, I'm not talking about headphones. I think we've been through this. On headphones, you can hear a lot of revelations on these new things, right? But I don't listen on headphones to music. I don't want to be like isolated in like that. I listen to it out. And I still say I'm missing things. When I listen to some of the mixes, I'm missing a certain tambourine here that's been muted, or a guitar note that's lesser, or something else that's now brought up more. George's moaning at the end of While My Guitar Gently Weeps now being, it's louder. You know, I'm tired of playing around with this stuff. So I am not really that thrilled with the stuff coming out, except, and here's where I'm going to redeem myself a little bit, I am interested in what Giles can do, or will do, with the earlier stuff. I am interested in hearing what he's going to do, 63 up to the Rubber Soul era. Yeah. I want to hear if he can really make those come alive more, and as we've said many times, take that harsh panning in the stereo vocal on one side, and center it a little bit with the technology they have now. That I really want. I want to come out there, guys, and applaud him. I want to be able to say, Giles, fantastic. I love what you did. But with other stuff, a lot of it I think was all right. You know, like Abbey Road was fine either way it was.
Yeah, that's an album sonically you couldn't make much better than what we've already done. You know?
And you know, even the White Album, I mean, I don't mind. I like Hicks, the way Hicks works. I keep getting mixed up with this. Is it Paul Hicks?
Paul Hicks.
Right. I get the name wrong. Sometimes I want to say Peter Hicks. Paul Hicks. I tend to like what he does a little bit better. See, to me, it seems like it's not so much a harsh remix as it is just a remastering of bringing what already is there, a lot of more clarity and vibrant. I kind of like that better, personally. So, as far as Magical Mystery Tour and Yellow Submarine, before, when I said I don't like the mixing things together in box sets, I really meant with regard to Help and A Hard Day's Night. I like those to be standalone. But I wouldn't mind if they did one box, because there's such little material covering Yellow Submarine and Magical Mystery Tour, maybe together, those two, because of the EP. You know, it's an EP of Magical Mystery Tour originally. I wouldn't mind those being kind of in one set and covered.
Right, but they have adopted the U.S. Capitol as the canon now. So,
right, right.
Right. Tone, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Joe in where the importance lies with the later boxes. I was really interested in the extra stuff. Now we're getting into the early stuff. My main priority is having a really good balanced stereo mix of that song, because those songs, because we don't have them. We've, like Joe says, we've got this panning. We want, you know, we want the vocals in the middle, and we want the drums in the middle, so it sounds like a band, and then the rest of the stuff can be, you know, elsewhere in the mix. But those two things are important to be in the middle, not over to one side. So that's the thing. I thought that they might do a combined box, without doing the Giles Martin orchestration. So they might take the Magical Mystery Tour album and add to that the four new songs that are on Yellow Submarine, and include outtakes from those tracks.
Which, if you follow, like that's like they threw
Can't Go Wrong,
and you go like they threw Hey Jude on the White Album, right? So Lady Madonna, they threw that on the. So to your point, that would be the same kind of thing where they would be doing, taking those tracks and lumping them onto the end of a Magical Mystery Tour box. Which...
Yeah, and there's also that, apart from those two albums, there's also the issue, which I don't really want to get into now, but just pointing it out, that there's this, the issue of the stuff that would normally be on past masters, you know, singles and B-sides that aren't on albums, then, you know, are they going to get a remix? And also, and they've also gone past, you know, things like, you know, Ballad of John and Yoko and Old Brown Shoe should have had a, you know, if they'd thought about the EP idea before Let It Be, they might have put that out as an EP on the Abbey Road box set, but they, you know, it just seems that it was a bit scattergun the way they went about it, and they're kind of in a groove now, but I think at first it was a little bit scattergun the approach to it.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, I hope that we will get, you know, a remix of everything.
Well, I got to say, Tom, just pops to my head too. For me personally, you know, as I love I Am the Walrus, I don't want to, don't touch it, Giles. Don't bury certain things I'm used to hearing for 50 or 60 years, you know, whatever it is. I don't want to miss, where's that go? Where did that go? What's this?
You'll always have the original to go to. Yeah. You'll always have it. So why not have a new version?
We'll always have old copies of it. We don't know if they'll be repressed as the new ones for generations to come, but yeah, we'll always have the old existing copies of it. But the thing too is, like, I hate what he did it to Penny Lane. And if you ask me, well, exactly what I hear it my way, and the nuances are missing. I don't know if it's some of the, you know, some of the, I can't think what the word is. Do you hear a difference in Penny Lane where things are missing, like a flourish here or they flourish there? Something I'm used to hearing come up louder is missing, and I listened to it about a month ago. Wish it was recent. I can tell you exactly where it happened in the song, but I'm used to listen. You just get used to listening to something, and suddenly it's not that anymore. It's something else, and I sometimes for the better, maybe.
Yeah,
but
the wonderful thing is that you have all these things available at your, you know, what, you know, that's the version you want to hear. That's the version you go to.
Like I find, like the other day, again, I listened to the White Album, and I like this. And the other day in the car, I played the 50th anniversary of All Things Must Pass. That was cleaned up, or what you want to call it, a little de-spectrized slightly or whatever. Right. And I loved it.
Right.
You know, so there's an example where, like, you know, I liked it, you know, what they did with that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, yeah. Tone. All right. Tone, you have one more thing you wanted to close out with that?
Yeah, I was just going to sort of reiterate kind of what you said, Andy, that, you know, everyone will have their go-to version of an album, but
yeah.
Let's have if we can have a remix, let's have it, and it's something new for us to listen to, something new for us to collect, and if we don't like it, then we don't have to play it again, but we, you know,
but it's there.
It's on the shelf collecting dust.
The old versions are still there.
If you like them. All right, well, we have gone around the horn with our four questions. We are now going to open it up to you guys, and I've already starred one because we had one question from Tanner about a half hour ago, but I starred it to go back to it. So now you guys can chime in with your questions in the comments if you like. Tanner asked us, speaking of George, I was just listening to the CD compilation Let It Roll, and I thought it was an enjoyable selection of songs. What do you think is the best George compilation so far? And we know this is a hot issue because there
the next really, one.
it's not yeah. complete. And we'll go in the same order as we did Clockwork. Right. So we'll start with Tom and work our way around.
I don't think he has a good comp. We did this on Talk More Talk where we talked about the comps, and I maybe the best one is Best of Dark Horse. That might be, but then you're missing this song, you're missing Faster, you're missing a couple key songs, I feel, on that album. But you know, I didn't like that he added the Harrison Camp, I didn't like that they added the Concert for Bangladesh live stuff on there. That's just me personally. But if I had to pick one, it would be the Best of Dark Horse.
Yeah. Joe?
If I had to pick one, it would be the Best of Dark Horse also, which isn't saying much because, like Tom said, there are things missing. But I do love that the things I love the best about it are things that aren't even like his best songs from other albums. New stuff like Poor Little Girl and Cheer Down and Cockamamie Business.
Right.
Those are my favorite things on there, and they're not.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really do his reputation for his other stuff that much justice either. There's a Russian or bootleg 2-CD set that I think is great, but that doesn't count. You know, it's not official. But I really think they need something else. It hasn't come along yet. I Let It Roll, I don't even own, which is crazy because I own almost everything officially released for just completest sake. But I'm not that wild about that selection either. And I don't like when they use live songs. I think they had to do that That was part of the agreement, wasn't it? That they wanted the company wanted some live tracks. I think there's some live tracks on Let It Roll. But anyway, I mean, that pretty much says it all. I really wish they could just get a good sampling of all years, you know, put it all. Now it's all Dark Horse now, right?
Right. It's all.
It's all Dark Horse now. So maybe we can get a really nice two CD set, maybe, or something.
Yeah. Tone?
I think it's the best of Dark Horse for me, just for those three unreleased tracks that we got. And, you know, all three of them are absolute belters. So it would be that one. But I kind of agree that we haven't really got a really good comprehensive career spanning compilation for George that has got, you know, all the good things. I mean, it needs to be at least a double CD.
At least.
Yeah.
At least, and I'll make it 4 for 4. It's the best of Dark Horse as well for me, because you've got all the reasons you guys said. Totally worth it for those three new tracks and stuff like Life Itself and things like that, which, you know, wore that thing out back in the day playing. And Cheer Down as well, getting on there. That's the best
Cheer
one
Down.
For sure. Okay, the questions are starting to come in hot and heavy, so let's go to the next one. This is from Nick. Nick asks, what is your favorite unreleased McCartney song? Unreleased meaning not on an original McCartney album or single, but something on the archive release is acceptable. Which I also means if it's not on the archives, it's also acceptable. Like if it's a bootleg track. Go ahead, partner. You're up.
Hands down, Yvonne the One. Hands down, the most. I mean, you could say Cage. You could say some other stuff, but Yvonne the One, hands down, beautiful song. Shame it's not officially out yet.
It will be. Joe?
That's the first one that leapt to mind for me, too. I was trying to think if there are any other ones that hit me harder. But, I'm not a fan, really, of Press to Play. But when I heard that, I really said, wow, I wish that had been on there. I think that would have helped. I like that song a lot.
Tone?
Well, it's definitely not Womankind. Yeah, Yvonne, great. That's a great track. Just to be different, I'm going to Boyle Crisis.
Boyle Crisis. Wow. Crisis. Hardcore. Good choice. I'm going to go.
Pick the one. Pick it. I want to hear you say it.
Water Spout.
No.
Water Spout.
Love comes in. Love
Come on, out. Man. That's the I best love it. One.
It's a good. Yeah, that
is,
a good that's track.
That is the best unreleased song. That and or Cage.
What?
That and or Cage. Good
What's
question.
Yours, Nick?
Nick, well, yeah, chime in the comments and show us, let us know what yours is. Moving on to the next question. I can star them all, which is nice. I can keep them all in queue, which is good. We won't lose them.
This is going nice, yeah.
The next one up is going to be from Tom. Our friend Tom Liverani. Tom asks, what are the chances of a release CD and Blu-ray covering George's 1974 Dark Horse tour? Tom?
Well, I mean, they 4 years ago, they said the stuff was going to come out. You know, we got the All Things Must Pass set. Maybe that didn't sell well enough for them to continue putting stuff out because we should have gotten a Living in the Material World, already, right? But,
right.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's starting to get slim. I mean, as the years are going by, we're not getting this stuff. I think it's maybe under 10%.
Yeah. Joe?
We're talking about the tour, right? The live
Yeah,
shows?
We get a live yeah. if we get a live yeah. release yeah. of yeah. the one of the like the one of the one of the concerts.
The last I heard, and I think we'd all heard, was that the Harrisons were supposedly thinking about it.
Right.
And they were looking for good material. I think if they look and handpick the best materials they can find to give a good presentation, it could be very interesting. And I would be way more interested in a Blu-ray, a visual thing, rather than the audio. I'd buy the audio as well.
Yeah.
But when it comes to shows, I kind of like to watch it and hear it, rather than just play the audio soundtrack.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a good chance, but they.
Well, we don't know.
They stopped.
No. Tone?
I think it's quite slim. Because you know, the performances weren't great with his voice, I don't think that they'd be too eager to put something out that kind of diminishes his legacy. It's got great historical value, and we know that, you know, all hardcore fans would buy it, you know, so it would sell quite well, and, you know, we wouldn't really care because we'd want it for the historical value. But I'm not holding my breath for that one.
No, I'm with you too.
I'd love it though.
We'd love it, but it's probably slim to none. I'd expect something else from the Harrison camp before we get that. You know, like an Uber living in the material world, maybe. You know,
and Danny, right? Didn't he say something like, "Oh, there's something to the effect of now the gates are going to open for"?
He did.
Rarities or something.
He did. We're waiting.
But you never know. Tomorrow we could see an email, press release, boom. Yeah, you never know. So
I'll take Early Takes Volume 2.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the big mistake? The biggest mistake was putting a Volume 1
on that.
There,
yes. As soon as you threw that Volume 1 on there.
Yeah, Volume 1, exactly.
Well, maybe they'll just do a Wilburys thing and just release another one called Volume 3. Good question, Tom. Moving on to Ollie has a question here. If Paul had passed in 1980 instead of John, would he be better regarded as an artist today?
Who, Paul?
Yes.
He's already extremely well regarded.
He's reversing John and Paul, Joe. He's asking, if Paul died in 1980 and John was still living, now would Paul...
I highly doubt that he would have been entered into sainthood that John was... you know, I mean, everybody, as soon as John died, I mean, you know, it was all John.
Right.
I don't think anybody, I don't think, and I don't think anybody in their right mind, if Paul died at that time, they would have said, you know, it was all Paul. I don't think that he would have got the same treatment or the sainthood, if you will, that John got. That's just my opinion.
Joe?
Oh, I think if Paul had died the same way as John in 1980, if that's what we're thinking we're talking about, that's what caused the deity and the sainthood, the martyrdom, the assassination aspect of it. I absolutely think, and I still believe that when Paul's time comes now, hopefully not for a long time, you know, but I'm saying without anything bad, anything horrific, I still think it's just a natural thing. They go up, you know, they're... You know, everybody loves you when you're 6 foot in the ground, kind of thing.
Yeah.
If I understand the question, maybe I don't. I think Paul would always be well regarded as an artist, be it then, if he had died in 1980, or today. If I understand, he always is. I don't think he would ever be less or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tone.
Yeah, I think if he died in the same way that John did, then I think he probably would, and you know it would have been, you know, Paul's the greatest thing since sliced bread for a couple of years, and then they'd leave it a couple of years, and then they'd start digging the dirt on him, and it would go the same way. But I never know I'm not sure if I agree that. That John's sort of sainthood is totally to do with the manner in which he died. I think it also had I think it also had something to do with the fact that he was such a he was this kind of peace guy, you know, talking up about peace, so he kind of had a bit more of a political edge to him than Paul does, I think.
Well, there's that too, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that maybe that John is, you know, regarded in that way, you know, immediately after his death because of his sort of, you know, humanitarian, you know, causes and that sort of stuff, the stuff that he spoke out about.
Yeah. Mm. I tend to agree. I think he would be, if it's the same way, then yeah, he would be regarded. I don't think it would be, maybe like Tom said, sanctified as quickly, but if it's the same manner, then Probably like every icon, or think about it, a celebrity, something, when something tragic happens like that, they get
listen,
elevated.
He was already elevated. He was already looked upon. I mean, he was already in the Guinness Book of World Records for being the most successful songwriter ever.
Right. And that was in 1979. Right.
That was in 1979. So, I mean, to say he was going to be elevated even more than what he already was, even if he did die tragically, I just don't. Let's hope we never find out. Yeah.
It's just an unspoken thing that happens. Yeah. I mean, I was 18 at the time. Right.
We're going to go to the next question. Yeah. You know. From Henry. Hypothetically, if Pete Best was never fired and Ringo never came into the picture, how would that have affected the legacy and popularity of the Beatles? Would the band be viewed differently now? Henry asks Tom. So basically, if Pete Best was just the drummer.
Well, we never would have got Love. If it wasn't for Ringo's drumming, they said, I think Paul and the Martins have said, if it wasn't for Ringo's drumming, they would never have been able to do what they did with Love. That alone just shows how important he was to the band. The whole sound would have been different. Now, look, they may have been really popular. I mean, when you have a John, Paul, and George in your band, I mean, there's a good chance that you're going to still have a great career. Now, would it have been iconic as what they became with Ringo? Who's to say? But maybe, you know. Mm.
Joe?
I think that Ringo is a very, very important and iconic piece of the Beatles' success. And not just the drumming, which is better than Pete's, in my opinion, and I guess many people's opinion, but it's also his personality and charm went a long way, and that's one of the reasons why he didn't fit in anyway. It was mainly Pete because he wasn't really a good Beatle. And Ringo, boy, that's right. You know, I don't have to say, we all know Ringo. What that's certain something about Ringo that's so much fun, the clown, the sad puppy, the charmer, the, you know, funny wit. You know, he was very popular in America. You know, Ringo was very popular. He's the most popular. Paul and Ringo were very popular, right? And I, as far as technically, I can't, you know, it's hard to imagine when you're used to something for 60 years. It's hard to imagine Pete Best's drumming and personality, you know, being in A Hard Day's Night, right, being in Magical Mystery Tour. Now you could say, well, we would have told him how to play that. You know, we could have told him how we wanted him to play. You know, but I just don't see he had the talent. In other words, I don't think they'd be as iconic with Pete.
Mm. Yeah. Tone?
Yeah, I agree. So much of it is to do with his personality, and we don't really know that much about Pete Best his personality. You know, would he have come up with the quips, you know, in the press conferences that Ringo did, and that was a big part of, you know, selling the Beatles in America when they arrived in America. The press conferences was such a big thing because they were so funny and lovable. Do you know what I mean? That enhanced, you know, everything that they were doing musically as well. Technically, I don't think, you know, he can't hold a candle to Ringo, I don't think, as a drummer, because Ringo unquestionably grew as a drummer as the years went by, as the music got more complicated, he kind of grew with it, and he was just so, you know, innovative as a drummer, not technically brilliant, but just so solid, and kind of knew exactly which drum or which cymbal to hit at which interlude in each song. You kind of say, you know, about drummers, the complete opposite to someone like Keith Moon. But Ringo just really sort of sat in a song, so you know. Sometimes you didn't even notice what he was doing, but what he was if you did listen to what he was playing, it was great. And I think that he grew as the band did. I'm not sure Pete Best would have done.
No, and I'll wrap it up with, yeah, they would have been successful, but they not would have been what they became. I mean, he gave them titles to songs. He was the focal point of both of their early films. a lot of them, you know, a lot of it anyway. I mean, I had a whole just scene dedicated to him with the This Boy scene in the Hard Day's Night film. So, yeah, they would have been, you know, they would have been okay, but I don't think they would have become what they became without him. So, yeah, I think, you know, so absolutely. Next question. Oh, this is an easy one just for me. I guess this is a question for Andy. Do you sometimes find it strange to say your favorite Lennon album is an album of covers? I'm super happy that you like the album, but still, yes, I maintain Rock and Roll, because that's who, I know it's like maybe overproduced or whatever, but it's John doing what he loved and way before anybody else did it. And that's why it's my favorite of his from start to finish, just Rock and Roll. And that's why I like it's the 50s music, which is who he was through and through at his core. Next. This is from Matt. Matt asks, greetings, gentlemen. Of all McCartney's classical works, what is your favorite and why? Tom?
I go between Standing Stone and the Liverpool Oratorio. I love the two female vocalists on the Liverpool Oratorio. I love the boys choir on Standing Stone. I think there's some really good experimental work done on the opening piece for Standing Stone, and I think it's definitely, people should definitely, I think, check it out. You know what should do, people do is check out Working Classical. Okay, I mean, because you got the familiar songs on there. Okay, you got, you know, the Maybe I'm Amazed, she's my baby, other songs that you know. If you dig that, then maybe go on and check some of, you know, his other stuff out. But Liverpool Oratorio and Standing Stone for me is kind of maybe a tie.
Yeah. Joe?
As of today, I have yet to listen to any of McCartney's classical music. I can't answer.
Tone?
And I'm not a big fan of the classical music, but I think I would just simply go for Working Classical because it's got songs on it that I know.
Right, yeah, and that's a safe bet to answer as well. Yeah. But I will say the Oratorio is a good listen to, especially hearing that's on the 7-inch singles box set. You got a single from this on that,
yeah,
which
yeah.
I had not two, which was really good. Well, I enjoyed
On one, yeah. I mean, they combined the two and they made it like an EP,
right?
On one of the singles, yeah.
Right. So the Liverpool Oratorio is probably the easiest one I think to listen to. Because you've got
plus they're singing in English too, you know. Yes. It's not like a classical opera or whatever that you would hear in Italian or whatever.
Yeah. And Paul actually the theme of, I think it was that work, Christian pop, ended up being a big focal point of this oratorio. And he has actually, I think it's on Pipes of Peace. I think it's on it's on the Pipes of Peace archive, and that became the genesis for one of the tracks on this, which is interesting. Right. Yeah, so for me, it's the oratorio as well. Let's soldier through because the questions are coming in. Kelly Smith, what are the three most unusual, surprising songs Paul has chose to play on tour, like "Hot as Sun" in '79, for example? Tom. Mm.
Wow. Well, you know, well, that's the thing. I didn't get a chance. I mean, it's probably the stuff from, you know, Soily, you know, in 76. I mean, who would have, nobody here in the States knew what Soily was. You know, that's the thing. I think you got to look back at those three early tours, and probably something from that. You know, some people never know. I think they only did that a couple times, but,
yeah.
But Soily probably the most unusual, surprising song because nobody knew it. And there you go, Tom, temporary secretary. I bet you nobody in at those shows where he played temporary secretary was expecting that song.
Yeah, nobody ever thought that, Joe.
Well, three that come to me, with Temporary Secretary was the first one, you know, which I like that song for what it is in the context of McCartney, too. I didn't think it worked live, though, unfortunately, but I'm glad he tried it, something different. I'll Get You, one of my all-time favorite Beatles songs of all, you know, B-side. I loved when he did that, and it was kind of a surprise. And also Too Many People. When he first did that, one for the Wings fans,
even though,
but I guess he thinks of it all with Wings, so that's great. Mm.
Tone?
It's a good question, this. I've seen him do Hot as Sun several times on that 79 tour. I must admit, I was more disappointed than surprised that he went back for that when you think about what he didn't do. But one of the most surprising, for me, a pleasant surprise, was 2010 at Hyde Park. He opened up with Venus and Mars Rock Show, which I really wasn't expecting and was really happy about that. And he also did, I think he did 1985 as well. Too Many People is a good shout as well. But also, I think the most surprising, the first time he did, I think this was in Liverpool, 1990, when he did the John medley, the Strawberry Fields Help.
Oh, at the yeah.
And Give Peace a Chance. That was a real surprise.
The Albert Dock, too.
The Albert Dock. Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. All good answers. I got to say, just from the one odd ones to be like 1985, hearing that for the first time was incredible. But I got to say, when I saw him in 2013 in Brooklyn, which was a great set list, he did Lovely Rita, and that was incredible.
Ah, yeah.
To finally hear like a Deep Pepper cut played live was really, really special on that. That was a great show.
I'd like to say one that blew me away that I have to mention, but it wasn't really a tour. It was on Unplugged when he did That Would Be Something. I never expected that at the time. When I heard that,
Those were the days when Paul did some unexpected songs.
Yeah. You never know, though. Hey, listen, we got Oh Darlin' last year. we got it.
You can don't remind you want, me of that one.
He did it.
Yes.
Okay, another quick one here from Henry. If the Beatles never broke up and stayed together, like to this day, like the Stones, would they have still their iconic number one band status they have now, or would they be viewed as washed up?
Mm.
Tom.
Wow. I mean, I can see if they would have scratched out releases, you know, like maybe every 5, 6, 7 years, maybe I can see them continuing to be, you know, considered the greatest band of all time. I mean, you know, you don't want to, feel like you're unwelcomed at any point. Who's to know? I mean, if they could continue to find a way to stay innovative, then yes. However, if they would have stayed like the Stones and just did, you know, stuff like Harlem Shuffle, then probably no.
Hmm.
Not at all.
Okay. Joe?
The problem I have with what-if questions like that, like what would John be doing now, or what happened with the Beatles, were still together, you tend to go by what you last saw and just think that's going to be kind of what would go on. Mm-hmm. And the Beatles, I don't think they would be washed up per se, but I know one thing is a pretty good bet. We don't know really how it would turn out for sure, but I think it's a pretty good bet. I still say that they'd have some off albums. If they kept doing like the Stones, if they kept making albums, even to now, they're not going to keep that pace up forever. It's a miracle that they did it all the way through Abbey Road, you know, and stuff. Perfect catalog. You know, eventually they're going to get a stinker. So, and I don't know how they would sound with heavier rock bands and disco era and all that kind of stuff. Who knows? I don't know.
Tone?
Yeah, I think it all depends on how well they were able to maintain the quality. I think it's virtually infeasible that they could possibly have kept up the quality all this time. They've all had weak moments as solo artists. So I guess it's kind of inevitable that they would have some weak moments as a band. They would have they'd run out of inspiration but it's really difficult one to answer.
And it's right. If they were able to continue being cutting edge, right, Joe?
Exactly. Yeah. maybe if they were cutting. But, you know, I dare say, you know, as much as I love the White Album, I'm thinking it may be my favorite Beatle album this week. But, you know, when you say, when you get to 68 and 69, they're kind of like not doing anything that different anymore? I mean, is it more just rock?
Think about how the music changed. Yeah, prog rock starts to come into heavy thing, and the direction of music would they have adapted towards progressive rock? I think they would have. I think a little bit, not deep like Crimson or Genesis, but they had the Moog synthesizer. I think they would have gone into that a little bit.
Like, I wonder what new things, new frontiers they could start. You know, they would seem to be doing that with everything all along. Like Paul always goes like this. He always talks about how they elevated, did different things. But by the time you get to Get Back and stuff, arguably, it's just, let's just be a band and play rock again. You know, there's nothing really inventive or super, super duper creative to do. You know, maybe I'm wrong with that. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think they would have been the number one stat. The fact that they only were on, they had officially recorded output for 8 years, and that was it. I think that's why. I don't think they would have been. They would have had some duds, and they would have been viewed the way the Rolling Stones are viewed now. That's just
remember that wonderful. There's so many wonderful moments in the Get Back film. But remember that one when I think Ringo's talking to Michael Lindsay Hogg, and he's getting a little uptight. And he's going, I mean, everything we do, it's got to be number one. It always has to be on the top, right. And he knows you can't do it forever. They know they couldn't do it forever.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's jump ahead to another question here from Charlie. Charlie asked, "Do we know if a professional DVD or presentation of the Live in Japan album?" Was made. Seems like George's box set, The Dark Horse Years, has an accompanying DVD with him performing live. Tom?
Not everything, from my understanding, not everything was filmed. They were shown on the screens, I believe. Ken Michaels interviewed the guy that mixed the album, and I think, don't quote me on this because I need to go back and watch this, but I think he said not everything was filmed, so you wouldn't be able to have an entire performance, even though we did have a few of those couple of songs that were shown on VH1 or whatnot during George Harrison weekend or whatever, but I don't think the whole thing was taped.
Yeah. Joe?
So I don't know if that's completely possible.
I don't think everything was recorded either, but the thing is, from what I've seen, out there, there are performances, press conferences, things like that. I would like to see, and I think they could do it, a documentary about the Japan performances. I hate to call it tour. I think it's 10 dates, 10, 9, 10 dates, 11. And, you could see all the hoopla with the Japanese people and Eric Clapton and George arriving and talking, and there's some good press conference footage.
Yeah.
And the best songs you can find, we saw some of them on the video, the DVD compilation, whatever you can find, that those are quality pro shot
video moments. Yes.
I think you can make a nice documentary. How long? I don't know. 75, 80 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, I'll be hide that one. Whoops.
Yeah.
Tone?
I think that was what they were filming for. Maybe a potential documentary. I'm sure I read somewhere that George didn't want the whole shows being recorded, being filmed. I'm sure I read that somewhere. So maybe they recorded, they filmed maybe a few songs here and there from different venues with maybe a potential documentary in mind. I don't really know.
It probably all exists. It just needs to come out, and it needs to be released. I mean, there's plenty of clips that we see of George playing that are included in that DVD, but just release the whole damn thing,
And so is the Royal Albert Hall show pro shot?
That's on YouTube.
No, it wasn't.
It's not.
It
it's not. It's not pro shot.
I have a copy, but it's not perfect or anything.
Yeah, it's a fan's video.
But hey, you were there, which
I was there. I was so there. Cool. It wasn't me taking the film though. I was too busy.
Imagine somebody smuggling that thing in 1992.
Thanks, Tone. Thanks.
Must have been a big video camera
that was, like this. That was it. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's like when you used to go to gigs, you used to get frisked on the way in for any sort of dictaphone or any recording devices.
Right. Can you imagine trying to smuggle that in?
Now, if you go to a gig and you don't film half of it on your phone, you weren't even there.
Oh, well, that's just a whole other debate, which, is just stupid. And on the concerts with the phones out. Don't even get me started with that crap. It's stupid. Couple more questions. We're going to wrap up here. Next one in the queue. Let's go here. This is a quick one we can answer. I think, well, Tom and I can quickly. I think, and I think Tone can. We know how Joe's going to answer it. What's the best version of Press to Play? The 10, 13, or 15-track version? Tom. So 10 meaning the LP.
I know, 13, yeah.
13 meaning the
the 80s, the CD.
The first
initial CD.
And then the 15-track meaning the 93. Right, which...
93.
Nice having the Paul CDs right in my hand here.
I'm with the 13. Yeah.
Just the
93? I'm going to take the 13. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of... what was on 96? I mean, the 93. Sorry, what was on the 93?
You had
Spies Like Us on that one?
Spies Like Us and I believe Once Upon a Long Ago were the extra two tracks.
Two best songs.
Yeah. Yeah, my other ones are on the other side of the room. Yeah, the 86 just has, right away, It's Not True and Tough on a Tightrope. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Joe?
Don't be sure how I'm going to answer it. Well, the thing is, I love Spies Like Us. It's one of his most underrated songs. I like it just because it rocks. There's one where it has a lot of silly lyrics, but I love it. And I love Once Upon a Long Ago. You said that so all those are both on the 13?
15.
They're on the 15.
Yes.
And they're not on the 13. I forget what the one I have, I think, has once Spies Like Us on it.
Then
anyway,
you have the 93 then.
Yeah, I have the 93. I'll go for the 15. Surprise me, because, I mean, the way I look at it is anything you could get more than just that album, you can only save it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I like the more stuff on it. The more songs, the more chances there are for me to appreciate some songs.
Yeah. Tone?
Well, I really love Press to Play anyway, but I'm going for the 15 because it's got extra tracks on it, and that's what we want. I'm not saying it makes the... Well, it does make the album better because they're all great songs that are added on, you know, the three main B-sides from the three singles plus Spies plus Once Upon a Long Ago. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, Spies Like Us fits for sure. Yeah, Spies Like Us fits for sure, but Once Upon a Long Ago does not fit.
Does not fit. Flow, that's why I'm going to go with the initial first CD run. In fact, I thought this is because I didn't have the LP until after I had the CD. And then I said, wait, where's the extra three songs? Not realizing that these were the bonus tracks. So to me, they don't feel like bonus tracks, but they are. Because
Once Upon a Long Ago sounds a little like, I mean, it has that Footprints vibe, or if I not a little bit that kind of magical thing, or am I imagining it? No, well, I don't. This whole thing, I know you guys bring it up from time to time. This fits, this doesn't fit. I don't know. Sometimes I agree, I guess. Sometimes I would agree, but sometimes not, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to do two more easy ones, okay? Charlie asks, what do you guys think of the Fireman recordings? Tom?
The first two are underrated. I think people should give them a listen. But that third one, look, Electric Arguments, I think is a great record. So I think it's a fine trilogy of recordings. You know, I wish Paul hasn't done an experimental record like that since Electric Arguments. I wish he would probably do something like that again. But I don't see it. But I think it's a fine. I think they're first two are good, but then Electric Arguments is great.
Yep. Joe? Mm-hmm.
I like Electric Arguments, but that's still one of the albums that I need to really hear more. I've only heard it a couple of times. That's for some reason. But I do like some tracks off that. I have the first one and haven't played it. And I have this one.
Oh, I'm jealous now.
I have it right here.
You're
next
making
to me.
Tom jealous. And the thing is, you have it and you won't even touch it.
Isn't that the worst? Isn't that the worst when
you
somebody
won't even
I used
touch
to,
it?
As a kid, I used to say, I deserve to have that. You don't.
That's exactly what Tom's saying right now. Tone, your thoughts on the Fireman?
I think the first two are pretty much unlistenable for me. I don't want to go there again. Electric Arguments, I think, is mostly a really great album. I think it tails off a little bit towards the end, but I think there's some great stuff on it, and it's an album that I enjoy, but the first two.
With you, 100%, 100% with you. That's the kind of music you'd hear pre-show music. It's nice to listen to it. Okay, it's electronica, house music, whatever, but you're not going to put it on to enjoy it. I mean, I know you feel that way, Tone. Tom, if you like that, more power to you.
But and that's why I'm in no rush.
No rush. Get it.
The rushes. The rushes.
The rushes. This here one from 2008. This is the winner here because it's basically a Paul McCartney record. And it's fantastic. Right. You had songs played live. You had Highway and Sing the Changes that were in his set list at the time. So the Fireman stuff, this album is what makes the Fireman listenable. This is why. Yeah. The other stuff.
It's a good album.
Yeah. Okay. And last.
Right, hold on, Andy. Andy, and hold on. Before we read the last question, guys, if you're new to the channel, please subscribe to the channel. Please hit that thumbs up. Smash the bell if that's
smash
how
it,
you're
baby.
Supposed to do it. Smash that bell. And please, we appreciate everybody being here. So again, please likes up, hit the thumbs up, and please subscribe. Thank you very much.
All right. This is the last serious question, and there's a nice little fun little question to close it out, which takes literally one word to answer. But here's a good question to wrap up. David asks, do you believe the Star Club tapes justify John's opinion that the Beatles were never better as a live act than they were in Hamburg? I'm going to go first and say, yes, they were better, because that's when they were never better as a live band than those days. He says by the time they got to America, they were just robots and toast. So, yeah. I think that the Star Club tapes do, even though they're not the best quality, but that is when the Beatles were kicking ass as a live band and really became the Beatles. So I think that that's when they were at they do justify John's opinion, even though the quality's not great. Tom.
Yeah, I think you made a good point there. I mean, I think the answer has to be yes on that one. You think about when they get to America and, you know, you can't hear them. They're playing because they can't hear themselves. I think,
Joe?
I'm going to say no, because I can't stand, first of all, I can't stand the Star Club tapes. And while I completely appreciate what you guys are saying, they couldn't hear themselves when the fans went crazy when they became superstars. But you know what I like the Beatles? A performance, live performance that I like that I think shows them at all their powers, and it's, I love it. Perfect. The Royal Command performance.
Okay.
They're quiet, respectful. They're all spot on. They get a chance to shine a little bit, like what it might have been in Cavern.
The infamous Rattle Your Fair. Jewelry concert. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Tone?
Fair.
This is a difficult question, because just the quality of the Star Club album like puts me off listening to it properly with that kind of idea in mind, that this is them at their best. I think they're learning their trade, but I think they were a better live band in the early days, sort of before, you know, don't forget that even when people were screaming here, they would go to Europe and people weren't screaming. They weren't screaming in Sweden and Norway and places like that. So they could, but think about how fantastic they were as a band when you're on stage. You can't hear what you're playing and you can't hear what each other's playing, but you're that together that you can, you know, we've heard live recordings like, you know, the Hollywood Bowl or something like that. And the performances are pretty good, seeing as they couldn't hear anything.
Right.
So how tight were they as a band during that time? You know, Ringo used to say he used to keep time by watching John's ass wiggle. You know,
right.
John had that foot tapping thing. You know, when he played, he had the foot tapping thing, and he'd kind of go by that. So yeah, it's a difficult one to answer, but I'm gonna go no on that
okay.
one.
Okay, I tell you what, if Peter Jackson gets his hands on these and cleans them up, that could be a big revelation. If he gets his hands on the Star Club tapes and really does the same, because it's the same thing that he did in the Get Back film, because we know that the Star Club tapes were poorly recorded. If he can separate everything else out and just bring that up, that will be incredible. So who knows? We shall see. And last, but certainly not least, here's a nice, easy one to round us out before we say goodbye. Let me just bring it up right here. Matt asks us one more question. Is the love you take really equal to the love you make?
I still don't know what that means.
100%.
Of course it does.
And how did we not know that this was a fact until the Beatles told us it was a fact?
What fact? Well, first of all, I want to understand it. Does that mean you always, if you give love, you always get it back? Is that the kind of,
means,
is that what,
means,
is
that, it means be a good person and do something right by people.
That I agree with. But as far as like this idea that it's equal, like if you give out love, you're always going to get it back. We know that's not always true. We like to think that.
Well, you do. You just never know when it's going to hit you, but it is.
It's a wonderful way to end the career. End their career, though. It's a beautiful ending.
It certainly is, Tom. You agree, don't you?
I mean, I've had some experiences that would maybe argue against that, but yeah, I mean, you would like to think that is
sounds
true.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's going to wrap it up for this installment of Stuck Inside These Four Walls, the live edition of episode 4. Quick plug around to everybody to just give us the final goodbye, and we can just say whatever else we're up to. And we'll say adios. Tone, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's a guy in the comments, Adam Fresh, who's asked about a squillion questions. And I don't
You don't know Adam.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Oh, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. I don't mean that.
You've asked us so many questions, Adam. I know.
He just asked a lot of questions.
You have a ton of questions, and we couldn't get to them all. I mean, we have a ton. They're great questions. We just can't get to them all. Otherwise, we'd be here all night. Right.
Well, I do have a favorite Beatles quote. How about give him one at the end?
No. Joe, what are you up to on your channel?
It's the Bloody Beatles White Album. Shut up. That's my favorite quote. I'm on the... I have a
about whittling it down to a single album, right?
That's, yeah. If you don't know, I have a YouTube channel, Mean Mr. Mayo. Check it out. I hope you will subscribe. Thank you all. And
Tone, you've just posted uploaded a new video on your channel about covers, right?
I know. I think it's going to be my most unpopular video ever.
Uh-oh.
going on early action on it. But anyway, you try. Some you win, some you lose. I've got a Beatles channel as well. Beatley Tone's Beatles channel. If you want to come over and join me. I'd love to have you on the channel. I do all stuff about the band and about the solo Beatles and deep dives into the albums and stories about being a Beatles fan and that sort of stuff. So
great channel, folks. One of the best newest additions in the last couple of years. This guy has great content and he just totally gets us. And we're so happy that he's joined our little circle here and happy to have him on the show.
Amen.
You know,
thank you so much, Andy. That's really nice of you to say.
Absolutely. I mean, you I love your takes. Even you don't like the medley, but we love you anyway. Tom, tell us about your new channel.
Yes, but first I want to say, no, it's you who have the responsibility. I just love every quote from that 67.
Me too. Me
you're
too.
The one putting this out. Yeah. You're putting this out. You're putting this out. People.
And why are they good?
At this
there's
moment,
two quotes
now.
That one in the White Album. Shut up, because it's too ballsy. Ballsy. Right. From the gut, quotes from Paul. None of this like, I'm not going to offend anybody.
Yeah. Tom, tell us about your new channel.
Yes, my new channel is called Tom's Movie Channel. And I just dropped the first video yesterday. It was talking about a film from 1973 called Mean Streets. And it's a series that I'll be doing, maybe a couple every month. My wife and I, we're going to go see a movie here in a couple hours, and we'll have a review of that tonight or tomorrow. So look forward to that. So again, it's called Tom's Movie Channel. And I just want to say thanks to Joe for inviting me on and talking so we can talk movies. I don't get a chance to talk a lot about movies, and it's been fun talking with Joe these last year or so in your chat.
I'm so glad, Tom, that you decided to come aboard with YouTube with a movie channel. And I have a movie channel real quick that I forgot to mention. This week it's called Mayo's Monster Mash. But it's not just monster and horror movies, it's got all kinds of movies, and I'm gonna change the title in a week. Week from now I'm changing the title.
Of course you will. The link to Tom's new channel is on the Two Legs channel. So if you go to our channel and you go down, you see the channels that we follow and integrate with. You can see Tom's new channel on there. So if you can't find it, just go to the Two Legs page, go to community channels, and you'll see Tom's channel there. And That's going to do it for episode 4, folks. We will see
you sometime. Wait a minute. What do you got doing? You got another video up for your Andy's for one leg
for,
or what?
For the one leg, nothing yet. I had a couple of new
videos. The other leg.
The other leg, Andy's Music Vault. I had two new videos in the last few weeks that were Yes related. I did an interview with an author of a new Yes book that's coming out on Tremato. And I did an interview with a friend of mine, Joe Cass, who's the drummer of a Yes cover band. And they're on there as well. And we'll have some new stuff for June. A couple of concerts under my belt that we'll talk about and go to see coming up. And that's it. And Two Legs World, our episode dropped today, 208, with Jude Sutherland Kessler, which was a really great discussion on Paul's 21st birthday and the trips that John and Paul took to Paris. And a really great conversation we had with her. It just dropped today. That's on our channel as well. So for Tom, for Joe, and for Tone, thank you all for tuning in tonight. And we will see you sometime in June. I was going to say sometime in New York City, but that's not coming out this year. We'll see you sometime in June. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. See you next time.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.